Beyond Athletic, episode 46.
I'm going to go to college. I've got to get the scholarship. I'm going to play volleyball. And then I have my life figured out. And it's okay not to have your life figured out at the age of 14, at the age of 16, at the age of 18. What is really important is to find what you're passionate about. And we all have a passion. And I think not enough people spend time figuring it out.
You might be smarter. Your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are beyond athletic. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Beyond Athletic. Today's guest is Nicole Davis. I am so pleased to bring you such an incredible athlete, such an incredible competitor, and really someone who not only invested in her future, but is just really invested in everything that she does. She does it to the full extent. There's no halfway with Nicole Davis. There's no kind of, sort of, it's all in or not in at all. And I can respect that completely. Today's episode, we get into so many different things. I mean, honestly, I think I learned so much from this episode about not only Nicole, but myself and other athletes, like situations that I just never really put two and two together. And now, I mean, it just makes so much more sense. So great things that she's been doing at her new place of business. And I hope that you guys look that up and check in on her every once in a while, because there's so much to be learned from her. Let me go through her bio real fast. So Nicole is a retired two-time Olympian, a two-time silver medalist at that. She spent 11 years on the USA national volleyball team. She played professionally in 8 different countries in Europe and in Asia. She also helped her team win back-to-back NCAA championships at University of Southern California in 2002 and 2003. And she's currently working at Win Forever Consulting, which is a company co-founded by Pete Carroll and Dr. Mike Gervais, as a coach and expert on high performance and cultural development for their corporate clientele. A lot there. So you're going to hear from her soon, but I just want you to remember, if you like today's episode, do me one favor, share it and leave a review. It's a double favor in one. Leaving a review just lets me know, hey, here's what I liked about the episode. Here's what I'm looking for in another episode, or I shared this with some friends. Let me know that I should keep doing this, because it definitely is a time investment and I do love doing it, but I want to know how to cater to everyone out there that really is listening in. So thanks so much for listening. I mean, there's 27,000 listens so far all around the world, and I really appreciate you all for that. So keep listening, keep sharing, and keep learning. Nicole Davis. Everybody, welcome to the show. Today's guest is Nicole Davis. Nicole, welcome.
Hi, Ryan. Thanks.
How are you doing today? What's going on?
It's early here in the United States.
What time is it?
Me. It's not that early. It's 8, but since I retired, this is early. So
yeah, I see. And so you're right now at the office. What's the office for you?
The office is actually split between my home. So right now I'm at my home, but the first floor of my home is my office. And then I work for a company co-founded by Coach Pete Carroll of the Seahawks and high performance psychologist Dr. Mike Gervais. So we have an office in Hermosa Beach, California. And then most of the time we're with our clients. And so they have, our clients have offices all over the all over North America. And so spent a lot of time now traveling domestically.
Mm, fun. And you were just briefly at USC, right? Helping out.
Yeah, my winter schedule with our clients was pretty light. And so I was able to volunteer coach this spring semester at SC, which was fun for me. I just really wanted to be a resource for the girls. And so we did a lot of great work, mindset work, cultural work, which was needed. But Mick needs a volunteer that can be there from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day. And that's not something I can do.
I see. Well, I mean, I've already given people in the intro a pretty complete bio of you. So I definitely want to kind of jump into things. But before I do, generally, I like to start off with some tone. So if we're going to talk about like your playing history and we're going to give athletes really kind of a toolbox to learn from your experiences, I want to go through those things with that tone in mind. Like, hey, this is how here's my outlook. Every day I showed up to training, every day I was living, this was kind of the way I like to live. How would that be summed up for you?
Well, I'm a competitor. Competing comes naturally to me, and maybe too much. And so that was a part of my evolution, was figuring out how to harness my competitiveness so that it was also good for the people around me. But my mindset every day was, how do I get better? And what I found is that one, I pivoted on outcomes, so focus on statistics, focus on playing time, focus on results, that actually becomes kind of paralyzing. So I found that a deep focus in the process of getting better was the best way to come in and grind every day, especially when you're training 6 to 8 hours a day. That can be really emotionally, physically taxing. And so the way to get through that is to stay focused on the process, on what's in your control, and find challenges.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. We actually met so long ago, and I like how you said one of the things that you had to learn was to how to tone that down and how to kind of think about things in a different way. And you did pivot at some point, and I think pivoting is something we definitely have to come back to, and I think we will naturally during this conversation. But I think athletes at a younger age need to understand that it's possible to pivot. You don't have to change your destination that you're looking at. You just maybe can change how you get there. But to go back to us meeting the first time, it was not bad, just so people listening don't think that. I just remember seeing you play and just go, wow, that is a lot of just straight competitiveness. Like, you always wanted to be the best. It seemed like you were so much harder on yourself than everybody else. You were always so focused. You were always in the moment. You were always ready. You're always there. I mean, it was just like, that's all I ever thought of you, was just like, look how hard she works. I loved it. I mean, there's only been really a couple other people, I'd say two literally, that in my lifetime I've ever seen work that hard in the gym. And sometimes it'd be like, Nicole, are you doing okay? Is everything all right? Because you'd be so serious because you're so focused. Mm. And I think sometimes as young athletes that can be mistaken. And I think we'll get to that. So let's talk about, before we really get into everything else, let's talk about your story. How did you grow up? How was life as a child for you? And then what kind of like sports did you play? How did you even get into athletics? And then what was the day that you found volleyball? What day was that? So let's get through those.
Sure. I grew up in Stockton, California, which is in Northern California, about an hour south of Sacramento. Not a very nice place. It's top three per capita crime rate in the country. But as a kid growing up, you don't know things like that, you know? So there's a huge river that runs through Stockton. So my family spent a lot of time on the river. There isn't a moment in my life where I don't remember playing sports. If there wasn't a sport for me to play, I'd make something up. I was very active as a kid. You name it, I've tried it in regards to sports. I did organize softball when I was younger, and my parents at one point kind of pulled me out of it because they thought the other parents were too crazy. And so from there, I transitioned to martial arts. And to be honest, I don't really have a reason why. I don't know if Karate Kid was a popular movie at the time. Maybe it was just something my dad wanted me to do, which is more likely. At that time, I had a good relationship with my father, kind of was his shadow. If he did it, I did it type of thing. You know, if he jumped off a 20-foot cliff when we were snow skiing, I'd jump off the same 20-foot cliff. And so I started martial arts. I did that for 5 years and earned a black belt. I was competing nationally. And when I was going into high school, I just missed playing a team sport. And so I signed up to try out for volleyball because it looked like fun. I had played it maybe twice before, like in PE and then a family reunion or something. And I just thought it was so much fun that I thought, well, why not try that? And so if I digress a little bit in terms of my family and to paint a picture for what that was like, I grew up in a toxic environment. My dad was physically abusive to my mom when I was very young. I remember her having a black eye. I remember her nose being broken. I remember several occasions where the police were at our house. I remember after the physical abuse stopped, they were still, it was a volatile relationship. So, there were several times where my mom was scared and called the police. I reached a point, I don't know, when I was pretty young that I got tired of the arguing, and I decided to pack a bag and, quote, run away, which for me meant, like, walking to the Little League diamond and hanging out with my friends and not telling my parents where I was. But, you know, I think sports was an outlet for me to cope with what was going on at home. And that's something I realized, you know, just a few years ago. And I think part of the competitive drive that I've had is as a coping mechanism. Part of it also is not understanding the mechanism of confidence. And so for me, I was deriving confidence from the work that I did, which fortunately for me, it was easy to work hard. I took satisfaction in working hard, but it wasn't building a foundation of confidence for me. And so, I found volleyball when I was 14, essentially, and literally showed up to tryouts in, like, jean shorts and a t-shirt with, like, Reeboks on, you know? Like, I had no idea about volleyball culture. These days in the United States, kids are playing volleyball at the age of 8, and they've got the whole, like, kit, you know? And I just wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself, even though I didn't know at the time what it meant to be a good teammate. And so I made the JV team, and I had this coach that at the time as a, you know, 13, 14 year old thought was crazy, but she's an older woman and she used to walk around the gym saying, if you believe you can achieve. And so we'd roll our eyes and, you know, oh, Coach Murdoch, she's silly. But you know, what a message to give to kids. And there's a lot of depth in that. It's much easier than if you believe you can achieve. But so anyways, everyone was encouraging me to play club volleyball, which I had no idea what that was. And my family could barely afford for me to do that, but I decided to do it. And I don't want to say the rest was history, but there was just this domino effect that happens where you become obsessed with the game, obsessed with the culture, obsessed with the feeling you have of being around friends and competing with them. And so I was recruited to SC actually on accident. The coach at the time, who was the interim coach, was Jarrett Elliott, who's the head coach at University of Texas now. He came to watch my 6'4 opposite and saw me and handed me a card and said, hey, we don't have money for you right now, but I'd love for you to be a part of our program. And so, you know, I committed to SC as a walk-on, which looking back was pretty crazy. And I've said this to my mom, like, I don't, what the hell were you thinking? Because she had $30,000 saved for my education and SC is a $250,000-$300,000 commitment. And so I don't know how I would have done that had I not earned a full ride scholarship. So long story short, I ended up earning a full ride scholarship and then was invited to the national team. And my story as an Olympian is a little bit different than most. I didn't grow up wanting to be an Olympian. I kind of fell into volleyball and fell into the national team, you know, and I didn't really wrap my head around the whole idea of being an Olympian and being all into the process until about a year before my first Olympics. So,
wow, that is quite the story. I'm really happy I finally heard it, honestly, because there's little bits here and there that you learn about athletes that you train with or you train close to, but sometimes you never have that chance to really just like get deep and dive into everything. And that's why I love Beyond Athletic and the tool that it is at this point, because
it's helping people really share what really is a part of their experience in sport, right? And if we look at sport as this vehicle in our lives, then we can say like, wow, we decide what we're going to do with this, you know? I'm just going to, like for you in your situation, it was, I'm going to focus in on this. I'm going to have my outlet and I'm going to go in, you know, the best I know. And so that was to be competitive, to work hard and do all these things. And then as you were in it, you evolved. Your situation in life evolved, right? You had no scholarship, which turned into a full scholarship. You had no aspiration to go to the Olympics, which turned into two-time Olympian, which turned into a lot of lessons learned along the way, right? Because even when you were at that level, if you were to guess, or you know for sure, when you were with the national team, because we're talking about evolving and the changes that we can make and pivoting and all these things, how much change do you think you went through as opposed to being like a young 14-year-old going into volleyball and then graduating college, and then from college to when you finish your Olympic career? What was the difference in change there, and how much do you think there was?
In the United States, most people think of college as formative years. And for me, my time on the national team were my formative years for a few reasons. One, just the experience of being on the national team. And there's a lot that goes into that. And then two, just the nature of playing professionally overseas in combination with the national team. I feel like I grew up in Europe, which is much different than growing up in the United States. And so I was greatly influenced by my time in Europe, my teammates, the friends I made, the culture, you know, being immersed in a different place, learning about other human beings, but then also the demands that are required of you as a human being, not just physically, to be on the national team, to be fighting for a spot on the best team in the world. It's all encompassing. It's not just a physical commitment. And so, you know, we had a dysfunctional culture on the national team for the first 8 years that I was on the national team, unfortunately, because we were very talented. But when I got to the national team, I felt like I was in shark infested waters. And, you know, that puts you in a place of defense where you're just, you feel like you're trying to survive. And then when things don't go your way, then you have to recalculate and course correct and adjust. And so for me, you know, that was about 2 years into my experience on the national team. I was used to, and fortunately I'm a great learner, but I'm used to making changes, learning quickly, being really good at what I'm doing in all contexts. And I felt like I was doing that, but I wasn't getting what I wanted in that. I wasn't playing. And so I had to pivot at some point if I was going to be all in to the concept of like what's in my control. And really that's your effort and your actions. And for me, that meant like, how am I responding to situations? How am I responding to other people on the team? And that's also in my control. And that ownership provides a calm, more or less. I reached a point, you know, where a training 8 hours a day where I felt out of control, because by definition, when you focus on things that are out of your control, you feel out of control. And I was waking up angry, and I wasn't satisfied with what I was doing. And some of it was just, you know, the nature of the culture on the team at the time, not feeling like it was very cohesive, and it was a team. Certainly it wasn't a tribe. And that I wasn't getting what I wanted, which I was used to doing, you know? And so I had to figure out like how to be happy outside of that. And then coincidentally, when I figured out how to do that and to focus on only what was in my control, then I became happy again. And so there was a pivoting moment for me, in that. And, you know, I was fortunate to be overseas and learn from someone while I was playing overseas in regards to her time on the national team and how I can change to be not only better for myself, but better for the people around me.
And if we take it back just a couple steps and we talk about, I want to see if you can dive into that and give like a scenario a generic one of an example, shark infested waters, because you mentioned that. And we have a very international crowd. I mean, there's listeners from over 80 countries and there's a lot of young kids. So I know that a lot of them are going to run into issues on their youth national, junior national team programs, school teams, whatever, pro teams. And so if we talk about that example, and then we talk about what it was that helped you, because it might not help everyone, but it might help one person at least, to really kind of get that key you mentioned. You figured out what made you happy outside of volleyball, and that in turn helped you in volleyball.
Yeah, lots of examples of shark-infested waters. I mean, the first is that, you know, the team felt very clicky, and in the sense that you want to be on a team where, regardless of who your friends are on the team, everyone is pulling for you to be your absolute best, because when you are your absolute best and as a collective, people are working towards their absolute best, then rising tides float all boats, mm-hmm. right? So the sum of the parts equal more than the parts, right? And it absolutely did not feel like that. So that's one example. Another example is there was a two-time Olympian on the team who came back to the team and said out loud, "I'm going to be a bitch because I can get away with it." There were two athletes on the team that if they didn't like the set they got, they would stop and catch the ball in warm-ups before matches. And so there were lots of situations like that where people were just doing what felt right for them for some reason. I'm not sure why that felt right for people, but, and the individual agenda far outweighed the agenda of the group or the objective of the group. And that is a very difficult place to be in. It just felt like every day you were fighting for your life. And so, and then we pair that with a coach that's not laying a runway for culture. Coaches can get in the way of the culture, but they set the tone for the culture. And so, you know, the coaches were trying to, they were doing their best. I trust that they were doing their best, but, you know, decisions had to be made. Things need to be said, to change or pivot the way the team was operating, the way the team has operated historically. And, no one had the courage to do those things or say those things at the time. So.
Yeah. And so if we take it to the takeaway, the solution to this issue is where you started saying, okay, instead of diving more into this, instead of getting more stressed out and waking up more angry every single day, mm-hmm. let me step back, look at what I can control, mm-hmm. and then go at that. And so what you could control is what could make you happy outside of volleyball to be more complete. Mm-hmm. And so how did you find that?
Yeah.
And what was it, if you want to share that?
Yeah. First of all, control is a locus of control is a psychological framework. That's something I know now. It's directly linked to workplace satisfaction and intrinsic motivation. So it's not a big surprise to me now that I was waking up angry and not motivated and unhappy. And so the ability to focus on what is in your control is a trainable skill. It's a psychological framework. And really it comes from just like being aware of your thoughts and when they're not optimal, getting locked into what is optimal. So playing time is a great example of a variable that is not in your control. Someone else's effort is a great example of what is not in your control. Someone else's, I don't know, communication or responses is not in your control. But it's so easy to get distracted by those things. And so it's like, can you relentlessly focus on that which is in your control, you know? And so what happened is, I was fortunate to get a contract to play for Fenerbahce, which is one of the biggest clubs in Europe. And I played with someone who had been on her national team for 16 years. And she ended her career on her national team by having a discussion with a coach about what she was unhappy about, saying the wrong things. And the coach said, "See you later." And she cherished being on the national team. She cherished her relationships with her teammates, and that was taken away from her. And she didn't want me to make the same mistakes that she had made. And so through a process of her sharing stories and me sharing stories and finding commonalities and differences, I started to understand that my destiny, essentially, is in my control. So there were two things that happened. One, I gained a perspective of, okay, what's in my control? And then the second thing is I was grateful for the opportunity to be on the national team. A lot of people think it's a right to be on the national team, and I have that mindset. It's my right to be here. I was the best Libero in the country. It was a privilege. It was a privilege to represent your country on the national team. And so what I also know now is that if you want to be happier, train gratitude. Gratitude is what precedes happiness. You can study that under fMRI, but gratitude and joy are what precede happiness. And so just by accident, I mean, I know these things now, I didn't know them then, but that's what happened. I was grateful to be where I was, to have the opportunity I was, to be around the people I was, even though they presented real challenges to me as a person. So those were the two pivots that I made.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing and recapping also, because now I don't have to, but let's move on to something, because that's at the end of the day, when we talk about that, that's a light thing because you found the solution, because there's always going to be problems and there's always going to be solutions. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep going and looking not only inside, but also outside of your normal bubble to find those solutions. And you did that. So that's great. Let's move to something where we could talk about, let's say, one of your proudest moments so far in life. This doesn't matter, sport, daily life does not matter. But just share why it was your proudest moment, kind of what happened during that, paint a picture for us, put us in that moment, and then what you took away from that.
Proudest moment in life for me is just my continuing, like, embracing of learning, ability to learn. And, you know, that translates to like a proudest moment in sport as well would be, you know, us winning world championships in 2014 for the first time in history. And what goes into that is a deep shift in culture that, you know, we were all a part of. And part of that came from just so much pain around the experiences of the last Olympics in particular, but the last two Olympics of this just doesn't feel right and we have to do things differently. And so we put a lot of emotional investment as a group into making changes culturally, which led to us winning world championships for the first time in 2014. I was not starting. I was there as a second Libero, and I did and said everything I could to lead from afar. And, you know, I was complimented on that leadership afterwards, which is not where my like compass is, whether I'm successful or not. But for me, that was a proud moment in the sense that like I've never been great in that role before. And I absolutely found a way to contribute to our team's success. Which was a huge, you know, learning lesson, a sign of, you know, that I've evolved as a person. And then just to actualize that experience, to actualize what a shift in culture can do for a group of people working towards an objective. And culture is not always the answer. For example, they got culture right, but they couldn't win a gold medal at the Olympics this year, right? And so it's not the end all be all culture. But you can't trade talent for culture. Like you can have the greatest talent in the world and it's just not sustainable. You might be able to win once or twice, but it's not sustainable. And so there is certainly like a formula that is unique to success, but, our ability to put ourselves in a place to be vulnerable every single day, to be open to learning, to be there for other people, not for yourself, but for them, was a really, I don't know, potent experience for me. And so for me, that's one of my proudest moments in my career.
Thanks for sharing both of those things. And I'd like to dive more towards the education, the self-learning, this actualizing all of this part, because now what I'd like to do is this last little part is more like a volleyball toolbox or athlete toolbox. Why did I say volleyball? Because we're both volleyball athletes. an athlete toolbox in the way that there's a lot of lessons we've learned, right? Things that don't work because we've tried them. And you have to learn those things sometimes, but some of them you can jump over. You can skip over them because a lot of people have tried them and for sure they just don't work. So let's talk about the things that did work for you in terms of being an athlete, waking up every day, getting it done in the way that you could be proud of yourself. Like what things were you trying to do on a daily basis?
I'm going to just reference like the last few years of my career, because that's when I figured things out. and I mentioned working hard, and I think there's a difference between working smart and for me, I derive my confidence and my preparation. What I now know is that confidence does not come from preparation. It comes from one thing and one thing only, and that's self-talk. And so your ability to guide your thoughts to be optimal in a moment is where confidence comes from. So I wish I'd learned that lesson a lot earlier. And then the second thing is a daily mindfulness practice. And by mindfulness, I mean meditation. And I wish I would have picked that up a lot earlier in my life. And, you know, mindfulness increases your awareness of your thoughts, your physiology, and your environment. And then it also leads to some truth in life. And if you just stopped on the first part, you know, greater awareness, then you'd be a better performer. But it's really good to get some truth in life about who you are and what you stand for. The reason is that you want to be able to stand in any moment and have conviction and hold weight. And when you're not clear on who you are and what's possible for you, it's hard to do that. And so moments like gold medal matches or championship games, they can feel like big moments, but in reality, they're the same as every other moment we live in life. But we attach some emotional weight to them. And so a lesson that I would have wished to learn earlier is that there are no big moments, and that, like, I can be me in any environment, but you got to train that. You got to prepare for that as well. Another thing is just, just this idea of, like, being there for someone else and being a part of something that's, like, bigger than you. It's really easy to get wrapped up in the idea of, like, what you're doing for you. And there is a difference between being on a team and being with a tribe. And with tribes, there's a greater purpose. And at the end of the day, it's nice to win a lot, right? But is there deeper meaning in what we're doing? And the deep meaning comes from the human experience. And my experience, especially overseas, is when I bring this perspective to my teams, especially younger teams, it absolutely shifts the way we work as a group, you know. And my season at Lucanet in the south of France, my last professional season, a great example of that. We brought that kind of culture, that kind of perspective to the team. And we won French Cup for the first time in history. On paper, we were not the best team in France. In fact, our budget was, you know, a fifth, a tenth of that of Cannes. And we were able to win matches, win cups, you know, like that no one expected us to win. And that all came from the way we were working together and for each other. And I just think it's really powerful. But those are a few lessons that I learned in regards to, like, where confidence comes from. Mindfulness is a practice. The other thing is, it's nice to know who you are, what you stand for, but there's a lot of talk about grit right now in the United States, at least. I don't know, it's a hot topic, hot word. Grit is passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. Most people think perseverance is really the more difficult component of grit. We all know how to persevere. It's like we're hardwired as human beings to persevere.
Yeah.
It's the passion piece that's really difficult to maintain, especially if you're doing difficult and challenging things for long periods of time. And what acts to combat passion is anxiety and fatigue. And so get your thoughts right so that you don't have an anxious mind. Because if you're eating well, if you're recovering well from a physical standpoint, if you've got nutrition on point, the first thing that happens is you wake up in the morning and you're filled with anxious thoughts of fear and what could go wrong. It's all thrown out the window. And so get your thoughts right. And there's a way to do that. Mindfulness is a training, formal mindset training. Get with a high-performance psychologist or just read and learn, educate yourself. But then fatigue, and so recover well, and that's both mentally and physically. And I think the process that happens is, like, as young athletes, you want to work, right? And then you don't spend as much time recovering. And then you learn something about your body and what happens and how quickly it can break down. And then it's like, okay, let me spend an hour prehabbing and let me warm up before the warm up. And then I'm going to go through practice and I'm going to spend another hour rehabbing and recovering. And that's a consistent lesson that I've heard from athletes in all sports. Kobe Bryant is a great example of this. You know, the day he had in his 88-point game, he had a Big Mac soup-sized meal. And he didn't pay any attention to recovery or prehab. And in the latter part of his career, and by latter, I mean, after 28 years old, he spent, you know, hours before and hours after prehabbing and rehabbing and recovering. And so knowing your body, but being able to recover, find balance, as you will, and then getting your thoughts right so that you can stay connected to why you're doing what you're doing. Because if you're not connected to that, then, you know, it's really difficult to stay in it.
Yeah. And I want to throw out there a parallel, because with elite sports students, the project that I have where we're working to mentor, showcase and help educate athletes worldwide, because there's like this strong disconnect between sport, life and education everywhere in some way, shape or form. In America, we have it in one form, and Europe and around the world, in these places where they have these pro club kind of structures, they have it where kids have to give up school to go towards this pro thing. And then what happens at 21 when you can't get a job? Well, you're screwed. You're going to work at a cafe, you're going to work on a splav, a boat, whatever, or you're going to have like this aspiration to be some kind of club owner. That's usually what happens over here. In America, it's like, oh crap, I didn't do what I should have done. Oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to be a coach, a trainer or something in sport. If that wasn't your plan, you're going to be unhappy. If that was your plan, you're going to be happy. So I think it's really important that young athletes understand that everything you were talking about is really important, and that with the mindfulness practice and the gratitude, you knock out three parts of what I consider to be health, what a lot of professionals consider to be health. And I had to read a lot to learn about these things. And I learned, like you, at a latter stage of my career, hey, I should be doing these things. Because when I asked people, what do? It was always consistently the same thing. A lot went out to their networks, and they took a lot of information from them and gave a lot of information to them. So mentorship, right? And then they were grateful for those mentors. And the others were also talking about the mindfulness practice, or at least the visualization practice, where you still are putting something into your mind where you have to be in a state where you can be calm and release the anxiety and all these things. But mindfulness will contribute to two great things without even doing much. You're going to become more emotionally healthy and more mentally healthy by just doing that on a consistent basis. That doesn't mean every day diligently, twice a day, but just do it consistently, right? And then the other thing, gratitude, it can either be in a written form or a spoken form, and it does so much. There's a Gabby Cueva from Team Bulgaria. I know she was doing something where she was writing down 3 to 5 things every night that she was grateful for, person, places, things. Some others will reach out to people every once in a while, like once a week, once a day, and just say, hey, I'm grateful for you because of A, B, or C. Thank you. And done. Don't expect anything in return. And then the last part, physical health. We all know how to do that. It's so easy as humans because we were made to move. And as long as you keep moving, you're going to be healthy, right? So thank you so much for all of that. And I want to just wrap up here because, I mean, we've gotten a wealth of information, and I love where you are now as opposed to the last time I saw you, because I always enjoyed you. And at this point, like with whatever you've been doing to be where you are, I'm just like, yes. So when I come back to California, we're definitely going to have to sit down and talk about everything that you're doing. But I love your mindset now, even more so. So to wrap up, let's just talk about really fast your plans moving forward, what you're going to be doing professionally and on a social level to benefit people. And then just your tips for anyone who, say, is transitioning from the high school age to college age to stay focused and have a great life as an athlete.
I'll start with the latter in regards to tips. And I think one of the things that I'm seeing is that kids feel like they've got to have it all figured out. You know, like I'm going to go to college. I've got to get the scholarship. I'm going to play volleyball. And then I have my life figured out. And it's okay not to have your life figured out at the age of 14, at the age of 16, at the age of 18. What is really important is to find what you're passionate about. And we all have a passion. And I think not enough people spend time figuring it out. They take a job because, well, it pays the bills. Or they do this thing because, well, it really lights a fire in your belly. And you don't have to have it all figured out by the time you're 18 or 21. But spend time reflecting on who you are and what that is for you, so that you have a purpose every day in life. And follow it. Just follow it. And things will take care of themselves. For me, you know, my profession is mixed in with also what you said about impacting other people, and that comes right along with my vision for my life. But as I mentioned, I work for what is a consulting firm, but the whole mission of the company is to help people be their best. And so we only work with world-leading organizations that have large footprints in the world for the reason that they have the ability to impact culture and society. And so we're working with brilliant people from large organizations to help them be more optimal as human beings, not from a productive standpoint, but from a human experience standpoint. And so I have the pleasure of working with high-performance psychologists and other Olympic athletes. That's the team that I'm with every single day. And I'm beyond grateful to be around exceptional people every single day. And our clients are, by and large, exceptional people as well. And so, you know, that's what I'm doing right now. It's high performance consulting, more or less. Mm-hmm. And so I have passion projects on the side, you know, working with volleyball clubs to kind of educate, if you will, the kids, the athletes, and the parents on mindset skills, on things like mindfulness, bringing that to them earlier, so that they can get right. Like you can't be there for someone else if you can't get you right first. And so my hope is that my experience can be part of an accelerated learning path for others, because my experience, my learning curve was clunky. You know, like I could have learned a lot of things a lot earlier, a lot quicker, even though I was committed to learning. And so if I could provide an accelerated learning path for others, then, you know, that brings a lot of satisfaction for me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And before we go, I just want to say that I am very grateful for you, Nicole. I'm grateful for the fact that ever since we met, you are always reaching out. You are always the person who cared, who listened, you know, and no matter how stressed you were, I knew that I could depend on you as being somebody who's just not going to turn their back on other people. And that is a quality that has been lost sometimes, because everybody's out to get their own and they really don't understand that we're collective. So thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for your continual learning, because where you're at right now is unbelievable. So thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, hey. Well, there you have it. Another episode of Beyond Athletic. Another learning opportunity for all of us. Definitely so much info. If you like this episode, please, please, please leave a review on iTunes, share it, tweet it, comment on the post on Facebook, whatever it is, show a little bit of love and let me know that I should keep doing this. If you feel like this sounded like someone you know or reminds you of some situation that you think is important that others need to know about, make sure you connect with at least that one person about this episode. Thanks so much once again, and look forward to the next episodes. Ciao.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.